There are hundreds of thousands of different products in the ag retail space, and some of them set out to accomplish what they're meant to accomplish, while others tend to overpromise and underdeliver. A tweet from Jacob Reinecker sparked the conversation that we had for today's podcast, and he talks about that side of ag retail and what's going on with the fertilizer market. I'm Ashley Davenport, and you're listening to the Ag Pro Podcast. So after a brief hiatus, I'd like to welcome you all to the first edition of the Ag Pro Podcast of 2019. And joining me today, someone you might recognize if you're on Twitter. He's at JS Reinecker, Jacob Reinecker. He is the Precision Ag Specialist of Frontier Ag, Inc., covering the Goodland, Kansas area. Right, Jacob?
Yep. That's me.
Jacob, you're the Precision Ag Specialist. Talk a little bit about what you do and the territory that you cover.
I split my time basically between being a full-service agronomy person doing seed and fertilizer and chemical and everything else right around the Goodland area, but for the rest of the company, which is basically from the couple western or eastern tiers of Colorado counties over to about Hays, Kansas, and north and south, about along I-70, probably 50 miles on either side. And what I do as the precision ag person is basically line up the field mapping. We run Varis rigs across to map field ECs and make zones. And so I line up that happening, and then I process the data and get our soil samplers out there to get it sampled and basically just work between the farmers that are wanting to use it and all of these other really big software companies and data processing companies and all that. I just kind of coordinate everything. I talk on the phone a lot, basically, is what I do. The long and short of it.
Talk a little bit about the ag retail side from your perspective as the precision ag specialist.
What we're doing is basically trying to help growers maximize their fertilizer efficiency is the biggest thing. Out here in this country, we're 12 inches of rain, 13 average, somewhere in there. And some years you'll get more and some less, and it's kind of hit or miss. And in our dryland areas, we can grow pretty good dryland milo and dryland corn. It's the low parts of the field that make the good bushels, you know, and we have some pretty rough ground around, so we see a lot of value in being able to maximize where we can crank the bushels out. And on the hillsides and in the badger dirt and all that stuff, you know, we don't want to be putting much down there. So that's where in this area where the value really is in the dry land. There's a lot of irrigated acres around here, and irrigated water can cover up a lot of problems. So we have the best luck on our non-irrigated, rougher ground. And I think it definitely pays dividends to have it done anymore. There's so many options that you can get a field zone sampled and mapped for basically the cost of about two applications to run a spreader across. So it's not a huge investment, and the way fertilizer prices are going, it'll pay for itself pretty quick. I mean, any efficiency that you can pick up where we're looking at margins as tight as they are, it definitely pays.
It's been a little while, and this was how my editor and I kind of came up with this whole topic idea. You had tweeted out, and I can't really put the tweet to words exactly, but you tweeted out a bunch of different emojis and said, "Spot the snake oil salesman." And you said you can't. And so talk a little bit about that tweet and why it was you said that.
We get a lot of people, just like a farm would. I get a lot of people through my office that are selling snake oil, and a lot of them are not selling snake oil. They're selling perfectly fine products, but that's the trick, is that a snake oil salesman doesn't look a whole lot different than somebody who's selling something legit. And yeah, I have a lot of folks that come through my office that have always got something they want me to sell for them. And 98% of the folks that come through doing that sort of stuff, I just tell them to give me a call later when I'm less busy and send them on down the road, because I'm not too interested in a lot of it. But yeah, it's just, there's a lot of products out there that they don't do what their manufacturers would suggest they do, or if they do do what their manufacturer says they do, it's not not the degree that they would claim. So it's just you gotta watch for it. I mean, I always look at for university research if I can get it. Here in Kansas, we're pretty lucky. K-State has a really good reputation as far as doing research and verifying that products do what they say they'll do. And, you know, growers out here really trust the K-State research system. So it's just, you got to smell through it. And I would never recommend buying anything that sounds too good to be true without talking to quite a few people about it, and not people that are standing to make money from it.
So that's what you would say would be your biggest red flags, is if it's too good to be true, and if there's no university research to back what this product is. Because I was going to ask that, like, how do you determine that?
I mean, yeah, it's basically the same idea. I'm not in the business of selling a whole lot because I do more on the service side of things. So, I mean, if something's not in my warehouse, I can't sell it anyway. And it's just, if you start carrying too many products that are a little bit questionable, you end up with a reputation of being an outfit that will sell things that are a little bit questionable, and we don't want to go there. So we're not moving anything unless we know what it does. And I don't know, it's easy to get excited about new stuff. And then, yeah, I want to see and have phone calls of farmers that have it on their field, and I want to talk to those farmers directly and hear the story from them before I would consider trying anything like that.
And what kind of stories, because I'm sure you've heard good stories and bad stories coming from these farmers, like what has been something that has stood out to you?
I've seen guys that try something that I don't think is all that great, and they think it's the greatest thing ever. And that's always, it's kind of surprised me, where you'll get guys that will find some seed treatment or something, and they tried one strip of it and it beat it by 3 bushels versus untreated. And next thing you know, they treat their whole farm. It's surprising how easily some people can be convinced, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, there's so many factors at play when stuff like that happens. I want to see stuff replicated quite a few times before I start putting my word behind it, because as soon as I do that one time with the wrong product or a bad product, then I'm pretty well shot. So I'm probably a little bit more cautious than a lot of people, but that's just kind of how I am, I guess.
Right, and it's your reputation on the line, and your reputation out in the community that, okay, if he's going to recommend this, well, who's to say he's not going to recommend this? That's another garbage product or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between me and a farmer, one of the many, is that I'm not really selling bushels. I'm selling my name, and yeah, so I can't get too crazy being trying all these things and talking up stuff. And if it comes back to bite me, then it's a long road to hoe to come back from something like that.
Exactly. So, how are you working with farmers to integrate some of these precision technologies into their lineup?
So we have a variable rate dry spreader, and we can variable rate liquid out of our sprayers for when we're doing like wheat top dress and stuff. So the equipment side of things isn't too bad. You know, if they have a anhydrous bar that is, you know, set up that it can be variable, I can get them scripts into their monitor to run that. So it's really, once you sit down with them, they show some interest, and you start kind of explaining how this pays and why it pays, then, yeah, I'll, on guys that I really think will benefit from it, if they're, you know, a little bit cautious or not wanting the cost. My bosses will authorize, you know, subsidizing the cost of their trying it out on a quarter or something, you know. We really think that there's huge value in it. And as far as retailers in this neck of the woods, we're the only ones doing precision as a service. I know there's outfits around that will sell fertilizer and stuff to guys who apply at variable rate on their own, but we're the only ones that are really helping guys try to do it. So it's a pretty big value, not only for the farmer, but for us. You know, obviously, the more acres we're doing variable, that's growing our business, and that's good for everybody. So, farmers are really receptive to it because it makes sense. I mean, it's good science, and it makes sense, and it's been around long enough that people have heard about it and know generally what it is. And if you come to them being like, hey, I'm right here and I can help you get rolling on that, they're usually pretty excited to jump in.
That's awesome. And that was going to be something I was going to ask too, about if there's been any hesitancy in adapting some of these, or no, I really don't want to get rid of my old technology because it's been doing, it's been getting the job done.
I've had some. we had a kind of a rough year in this country this last summer. Lot of hail, and like, it's insurance that's paying for a lot of stuff. There was a lot of irrigated corn that will usually go 220 to 250 that made 80 or 90 just because all the hail we had early. And so there was guys that, you know, got cold feet midway through the summer when they realized their cash flow wasn't going to be quite what they thought it was. So yeah, we deal with that. I'm not in the business of selling somebody something they don't want. So it's my job to show them what we can do and why I think it's a good idea. But ultimately, it's their call. And there's nothing wrong with old technology if you're happy with it. It's worked good for you so far. But I mean, if you're really down to the wire and you're pinching every ounce of juice out of every penny, I think you want to be looking at moving into some sort of precision fertility program or precision seed. If you can change your populations up a little bit and maximize your seed expenditure too, which we do some of that, and it's a pretty good way to really, you know, really make sure every dollar you're spending is doing as much good for you as you can. So,
and that kind of transitions to the next point, where every dollar matters, especially in this fertilizer situation that we have going on right now. I'm also the producer for AgriTalk, and that has been a hot topic of conversation with farmers and everybody involved, is what is going on in these fertilizer markets.
Well, it's in this area, we've had on the nitrogen market side of things, to begin with this summer, there was a few geopolitical things that kind of changed things up. And I'm not a foreign policy expert by any means, but my understanding is when we put sanctions back on Iran after Trump came into office, in the time between the Obama deal with Iran and Trump's election, Iran had become a pretty big anhydrous ammonia exporter. The sanctions did away with most of that. So there's less supply in the system, and there's less cheap supply. Countries like Iran and China, they don't have the regulatory burdens that a lot of the developed countries do, or more developed countries. So you end up with cheaper product available for export. So that was one thing. And there's less in the pipeline. And then domestically, where we had not much get on this fall at all, we will be, come springtime when our frost comes out, at least in this area, I am fairly confident we will be under allotment, and the plants won't be able to make it as fast as we need it or we can pull it. So it's a seller's market, and anybody manufacturing nitrogen is going to certainly be in the driver's seat as far as how they want to set their prices. It doesn't matter how much it costs them to make it. It doesn't matter what the price of the stuff that any of your local retailers have in storage. It's purely supply and demand, and if there are, nobody's trying to sell anything for as cheap as they can. I mean, that's, nobody ever worries about how little they can sell something for. They're going to be in the market, and if the market's at $600 a ton or $650 a ton, then that's where even a ton of fertilizer that was bought last summer at $450 is probably going to be resold again this summer or this spring here in that $600 range. So it's not going to be fun at all, but it'll be one of those years where if you're wanting to think about changing your fertilizer program, it's probably not a bad year to think about doing something a little different, because it will be, the conventional fertilizers will be slogged, especially anhydrous. So yeah, I have some guys that are switching to more dry fertilizer, just because, we have a little bit better supply of that, and it didn't run up this fall like anhydrous did, as much. The value per pound of nitrogen is still pretty heavy, and in this market area is still pretty heavy. You're probably 11 to 10 cents a pound cheaper to roll with anhydrous, but if you can't get that anhydrous on your field come springtime because you can't get enough tanks there because the plant at Dodge City can't make it fast enough, what's the cost per pound then, when you figure that you got to delay your planting 2 weeks because you weren't able to get fertilizer? So, it's going to be an interesting spring that I'm not looking forward to at all, but, it was just a function of the weather and the way things played out over the last year or so, kind of set us up for a mess. But I don't know. We'll slog through it. We do every year. But it's a time that you really hoped you booked some of your fertilizer and got it contracted with guaranteed delivery. About a couple months ago,
because yeah.
It'll be, availability is going to be the biggest problem, and then price follows availability. So,
and it's just, unfortunately, it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's a commodity market, just like grain. Anhydrous ammonia is a commodity, and it sucks when you're a farmer and you're buying commodities and selling commodities. You don't get a lot of relief on prices when things go haywire, and you could turn this situation around and say that it didn't rain in Brazil for all winter or all of their summer, and suddenly beans ran up to $16 or something. Well, I'm pretty sure nobody would be complaining about that, even though it didn't probably cost you $16 to grow them.
Right.
It's the same on the fertilizer side, so it's a commodity game.
No kidding. Well, Jacob, just to wrap things up, what would you say on your side of the business is something that people don't necessarily understand or misunderstand?
Oh, I don't know. I think as far as a public perception, I don't think a lot of people realize that agriculture and row crop farming has advanced like it has. Just when I grew up in Boise, Idaho, or around Boise, Idaho, which is, we farmed and stuff, but it's much more of a suburban, urban area than Western Kansas. And I went home for Christmas and just talking to people there, like out here, most people pretty well understand farming, but back there it's not that way. And I got a lot of questions when they asked exactly what I do now. like, well, I'm a precision ag person. Well, what's that mean? Well, I make maps of fields and, you know, change rates of fertilizer, basically. And, you know, people had no idea how progressive a lot of row crop agriculture has become. And so, yeah, there's a lot of people that are really amazed that I spend so much time on a computer looking at satellite pictures and elevation maps and stuff, and it's all to grow corn, you know. It's definitely a big and growing industry, and, you know, I think the more of it we do, the more the public realizes, you know, how advanced we are and how not only advanced, but how much more environmentally sustainable it is and all that good stuff that they love to throw around. So, yeah, I'd say that's the biggest thing. People don't realize just how advanced we can be in this stuff.
Absolutely. And it's true, because you have that stereotypical image of a farmer in your head of, you know, straw hat and flannel and overalls. And, yeah. And that definitely is one of the biggest things that people on the outside don't seem to know about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. And I think probably just myself, I kind of, if you were to look at me right now, I definitely look more like the stereotypical dumb farmer than a computer wonk, but you know, it doesn't that there's no aesthetic evaluation to become a computer nerd, so or an agronomy nerd. So, yeah, it's kind of funny when I tell people exactly what I do. I don't know. I think everybody I grew up with expected me to be working on a feedlot or something, punching cows. But no, it's. It's a fun business. It's a good business for anybody to get into. Just not necessarily fun to do it when prices are this way. But if you got to come into a business and start doing it, you may as well do it when times are tough. That way, you really enjoy it when it's going gangbusters.
Exactly. And one of the best pieces of advice I'd ever been given was, you got to swim through the crap to get to the sun.
Yep. Yeah. No kidding. No kidding.
Well,
that's a fact for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I've been talking to Jacob Reinecker. He is a precision ag specialist for Frontier Ag Incorporated, and he's located in Goodland, Kansas. And Jacob, if people want to get a hold of you, where do they need to go? Twitter's a good source, I know, but...
Yeah, Twitter's always a good one. You know, the thing about being on my phone all the time is I have two cell phones. So I'm on my phone on one and on Twitter on the other, which is bad, but... No, they can reach me at, they can call or text me, 785-728-8251, and I'll be pretty quick to answer phone calls if you need help or are interested in trying anything precision-wise in this western Kansas, southwest Nebraska, eastern Colorado area. I'd be happy to help somebody get started or at least answer them questions. And if I'm too far out of their area, I can probably point them in the direction of somebody that's pretty darn good at doing the same thing. So,
awesome. Well, Jacob, it's been lovely to visit with you. I really appreciate your time today.
Oh yeah, no problem. I appreciate the call, and it was good talking to you and nice to kind of meet you, I guess.
And it's nice to put a voice with a Twitter handle. I'm Ashley Davenport, your host of the AgPro Podcast. New episodes drop every Wednesday on the AgriTalk app or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. I'm very open to suggestions, so if you have an idea for a podcast, be sure to send me a tweet at AshD926, or you can send me an email at adavenport@farmjournal.com. Until next week, guys, have a good week and stay safe out there.